Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to show number 83 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffitt, and I'll be your host for this afternoon's show. I'm Managing Director and founder of the creative communications consultancy Woodread and a member of the Guru Group of Engage for Success. And as regular listeners will know, I'm one of the part-time hosts of the Engage for Success blog talk radio show. Just a little bit about Woodread as an organisation for those who may not be familiar with our work. We work with leading blue chip clients, as well as many not-for-profit and public sector organisations. And what we do is we help them to use their brands as tools to drive employee engagement. So for us, the brand inside is just as important as it is to marketing teams on the outside. I'm very pleased to have as our special guest for today's show, Paul Devoy. Paul is Head of Investors in People, a role that he's had since 2011. And he's joining us today to talk about the new Investors in People framework that's currently in development and about to be launched. So Paul, very warm welcome to this afternoon's show. Hello, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jo. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. Good to have you, Paul. Thank you. So before we get into the meat of the show this afternoon, which is, as I say, really to talk about the new Investors in People framework, I wonder whether we could just understand a little bit about your background, Paul. I know you've been Head of Investors in People since 2011, but can you just to give us a little bit of a brief resume of your personal story in terms of your background?
Yeah, sure. Well, my background's got two parts to it, really. My main area is around organisational development, and I was Head of Organisational Development in the Scottish Prison Service for 4 years. I've also got background in government policy around workforce development, so I've been involved in various aspects of looking at vocational skills across the UK. So both of those things combined together give me a real passion for trying to realise the potential of people within the organisations where they work.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, and you've been with Investors in People since, just nearly 3 years, or just over 3 years now, I think, haven't you?
That's right. I mean, one of the first things I did when I joined the prison service was to introduce Investors in People across all 17 establishments in the late 90s. And then coming back to Investors in People 3 years ago was a bit like coming home, really. And it's a fantastic movement to be involved in.
Rightio, good. And so what we're going to be talking about for the next, nearly half an hour now, is the new Investors in People framework. And I suppose a sensible place to start our conversation really would be to ask you why now, what's changing? So what's prompted you to make changes to the framework then, Paul?
Yeah, so the reason that we are refreshing and updating the framework is I think there has never been a bigger opportunity for the people agenda in organisations. I listened to your interview with Peter Cheese recently, and he talked about the size of the opportunity, the fact that this agenda is now towards the top of the list of priorities for senior executives, whether it be in any sector, public, private, third sector. But he laid down a challenge as well that, what we needed was transformational change. And in Investors in People, we've got a great product, but we're up for that challenge, and we believe, like Peter does, that there's a huge opportunity out there to really raise the standard of people practices in the UK and internationally for that matter. So we decided that it was a good opportunity to look at the Investors in People framework and update it.
Okay, and just to, by way of a little bit of numbers on that, I mean, you talked then about clients in the UK. You also mentioned internationally. So how many organisations are using the current framework, Paul?
Yeah, we've got over 15,000 organisations in the UK who are currently IIP accredited organisations, and they range in size and sector So we have organisations like McDonald's, Bentley, Vauxhall, Virgin Trains, and equally we have, you know, your local primary school and third sector organisations. So we have a wide community of organisations who all believe that realising the potential of your people is the best approach for long term success.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the international aspect.
Go on. Internationally, you were going to say internationally?
Yeah, we've got about 700 organisations internationally. They tend to be larger corporates across 70 countries, and we have delivery partners in 22 countries across the globe.
Right, right. So what I was going to say, really, in the same way that the four enablers of Engage for Success are equally as applicable to organisations, whether they are PLCs, public sector, SMEs, voluntary organisations, third sector, then Investors in People has a similar ethos, really, in that the principles and the framework is equally as applicable and to organisations of whatever size.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. At the end of the day, it's all about people, and you know, people are the same whether they're in a small organisation or a large organisation. The things that they value, the things that enable them to be the best that they can be at work, are basically the same whether it's in a large organisation or small. Maybe the processes and the environment's different, but what people really respond to is essentially the same.
Okay, so, as you say, you've seen this great opportunity for transformational change, this seriously important item on the senior execs agenda, and you're responding to that by taking a look at what you're actually doing and how you're approaching it. So can you perhaps give us a little bit of an insight into the process that you've gone through to put together this new framework? You know, what have you actually been doing?
Yeah, so we started the exercise back in January, and we undertook a survey of all our IIP accredited organisations and had a fantastic response to that. Over 1,000 organisations responded, and that gave us a really good insight into what was best practice that was emerging across those organisations, and where were the areas that we needed to focus on. We also did an extensive piece of research looking at, well, what are the best practices that are taking place across organisations of different sizes, of different sectors. And we looked at a lot of the academic research, particularly around about high performance working practices. And from that, we distilled that down to three broad areas and 9 indicators where we've defined as being key to long term sustained high performance.
Righto. Okay. So high performance, the principles of high performing organisations are sort of fundamental to the new approach then. Is there any particular ethos that has driven the change? You know, is it simply, yes, we want to absolutely put high performing organisational principles at the heart of what this is about, if you were to try to encapsulate what you've set out to try and do in a nutshell, what might it be, Paul?
So I would say there's three things. You know, Investors in People is a great product already, so it's about building on the strengths of what we've currently got. So you know, we'll continue to be a best practice standard that focuses on leadership, engagement, and people development. That's what Investors in People's always done. We'll continue to have different levels of accreditation around, you know, the standard, but moving up through bronze, silver, and gold. Many of the evidence requirements that we had in the current standard absolutely still ring true. So what we're doing is building on the strengths that we've got, but also looking at the best practice that's emerged through talking to our client base and looking at the research to then build on that and focus around what are the areas that really deliver long-term sustained high performance working.
Okay. So those are the core principles that underpin it, and as you say, building on what has been there before. So it's not people who have been involved in this in the past won't look at the new framework and think, oh my God, what's happened? There's a degree of linkage then.
Yeah, we were really conscious of the fact.
Yeah, sorry, go on. Yes.
I think that delay is catching out again, Jo. Yeah, we were really conscious of the fact that we needed to build on the strengths that we currently have. I spend, at least a day a week out talking to businesses and organisations of, varying kinds. And it's really heartening to see that many, many of them, the investors and people framework is the basis upon which they build their people practices and their people strategy. So there's a big responsibility on us in terms of looking at how we can create a new and improved framework on the back of that, because we need to make sure that it builds on what we've got and is not too disruptive to the organisations that we currently mm-hmm. work with. But equally, mm-hmm. Create a framework and a standard that's going to be hugely attractive to organisations that maybe haven't engaged with us before, because they know it really will be about working with, the really best and understanding what best practice looks like.
Right. So let's move on then. What you touched on there being three broad areas and nine sort of functional areas, but can you go into that in a little bit more detail? What's going to be different about the new framework compared to what people, either those who currently work with it, or maybe, as you say, those who perhaps have chosen for whatever reason not to work with it, how will the new framework differ for those people?
Yeah, so I'm a great believer in less is better. So we've sought to simplify the existing framework. We've reduced the number of evidence requirements for it. We have simplified the structure of it. So we've gone from 10 indicators down to 9. And at the right. centre of it, it's all around about what is the ambition for your organisation, where is your mm-hmm. organisation going. And then we've mm-hmm. brigaded the 9 indicators under 3 headings around about leading. So what's the leadership in your organisation look like? Secondly, mm-hmm. how do you support your people to be the best that they can be? And do you have, mm-hmm. thirdly, do you have a focus in looking forward and seeking to continuously improve the way that you perform? And there's lots of alignment with the Engage for Success 4 enablers in that, and I don't know if it would help if I maybe kind of draw those parallels together for you.
I think that would be very helpful, Paul. Yes, please do.
Yeah, so if we start off with the whole idea of starting your business ambition, mm-hmm. The first of your 4 enablers talks about visible, empowering leadership and a strong strategic narrative. We absolutely mm-hmm. agree with that. And our first main indicator is around leading and managing people, how the leaders live the values rather than just it being a chart on the wall or a set of statements, that those values yeah. are absolutely imbued throughout the organisation and leaders characterise that in all their behaviours. So we very much focus on that as well. Around about empowering and involving your people. So engaging managers who really listen to the employee voice and who speak with integrity in what they do and how they act, that it's absolutely mm-hmm. aligned with those values. So those 3 areas together, 1 is around leading and managing people, 2 is around encouraging the right values and behaviours, and 3 is around empowering and involving people in the decision-making process and really driving engagement. So there's a yes. strong, there's a very, very strong link between the enablers that Engage for Success advocate and what we're advocating in this new framework. The second area is around about supporting. Mm-hmm. And a new focus for us is structuring work. The high-performance working research has found that one of the key drivers for success is how you design jobs. And one of the shocking statistics that I saw recently from research that was conducted by the UK Commission for Employment and Skills, which was with over 80,000 employers, is that there are 4.3 million people in jobs that don't fully utilise their skills and experience. That's a huge waste of productivity for us as an economy. And one of the key reasons for that is that people aren't in roles where they have well-designed jobs and jobs that give them the autonomy to make the right decisions in order to have the best outcome. So that's an important area for us as well. And then five is around about managing performance. I think it was Peter Cheese as well who said that Generation Y expect and demand regular feedback. And, you know, I would absolutely agree that that shouldn't just be for Generation Y, that everyone has a reasonable requirement to expect regular constructive feedback. So how about how organisations manage performance positively and how that management and performance supports the values and the employee engagement that they're looking for? And then number six is around rewarding and recognising performance. I think a lot of the research that's coming out of the States in particular is showing that, you know, it isn't really about financial reward, that reward and recognition is as much, if not more, about how people are incentivized and how, you know, you stimulate their intrinsic motivation, that you secure their discretionary effort. And a large part of that is about how you engage with them, around how you are clear about the purpose of the organization and what you're there to achieve, and everyone's bound into it. So rewarding and recognizing in a way that, you know, looks well beyond the kind of financial metrics and much more into how do you excite and involve and engender that engagement within your workforce to do the right things. And then the last area around improving, you know, IIP has always been around building the capability of your workforce, investing in your workforce in order that they can maximise their potential. So we're absolutely still very focused on that. We've always had a focus on continuous improvement. And lastly, in number nine, a new area for us is around the whole idea of sustainability. I think what we've learned from, you know, the financial crash, that having practices in place that drive the right types of behaviours and have people practices that drive the right types of behaviours for the long term, for the long term success of the organisation, not just the short term, is really important. And I think that's another area that executives are much more focused on now than they have been hitherto, and something that's an important focus for us as well.
Okay. And then, so just simplified then, but into three very clear were you calling them function areas, or what? How do you describe those three areas?
So three high level areas, and then nine indicators underneath that. So each of the high level areas have got three indicators underneath. Three around leading, three around supporting people to do the right things, and three around improving performance. And all of them corralled around and focused on helping organisation achieve its business ambitions.
Yes, which is at the heart of all of it, really.
Absolutely. It has to have a focus. It has to be, you want to have the right standards in place, but all of these standards are around about putting standards in place that enable the organisation to achieve its potential. And there's one other really important innovation that we've brought that is absolutely new, is that each of those nine areas will have four levels. The term that we're using for it at the moment is a maturity model. There's a heated internal debate going on about whether that's the right name for it or not. But essentially what it's about is saying, how mature and embedded are these practices in your organisation? And we're looking at four different levels around how those practices are embedded, and we'll be measuring organisations on that basis.
Okay, interesting. So again, something that really plays to the different level, different sizes of organisations, different scales of organisations, but also the different ages of the organisations, and also within those organisations, the different levels to which they've embraced these principles, and as you say, they are embedded within them.
That's right, and it helps us work with the very wide and diverse range of organisations that are part of our community. So we can use a narrative around the different levels that is meaningful for them. So we think, you know, certainly from the testing that we've done so far, that has been very well received.
Yeah, Paul, can I ask you? And that all seems to hang together and make a lot of sense. what one of the things that I've picked up on in the past, and maybe you can address this for me, is that there's been a sort of feeling that perhaps investors in people can be a little bit over bogged down in paperwork, and that, you know, you've got to fill forms in and processes and an awful lot of sort of proof of paperwork going on. And is that something that you've looked at this time?
Yeah, that has been a misconception around about investors and people for a very long time. And I think I understand where it comes from. If I think back to 1999 when I was working in the prison service, you know, I'll be honest about it, investors and people then was looking at, did you have the right processes in place, largely. Mm-hmm. It's not been like that for a very long time. There's no actual paperwork required at all. What investors and people does is, we go in and interview the people in your organisation at every level and check to see whether those outcomes that are described in our best practice framework are actually evident. Can your people describe them? Can they describe, more importantly, what the outcome of them are? And the chairman of Vauxhall put it to me really succinctly, which I thought worked very well. He said he sees IIP as a bit like having his own independent undercover boss without having to go on Channel 4, that, you know, someone comes in and gives him that insight, that really rich insight into what his people understand about how embedded and how drilled down those practices are. And I think one of the legacy issues that we have a little bit is that there are a lot of senior people in organisations now who were maybe, their experience of IIP was formed back in the 1990s and on that process basis. And the analogy I would draw is, it's a bit like imagining that Apple still produced the same computers that they did in 1999. You know, mm-hmm. they've moved on a great deal in that time because they've moved with what the market demands, and so have we. And,
yes.
and absolutely, we will continue to do that even more in the future going forward.
Right. I see. So that isn't a change then as a result of this new framework. That's something that's actually changed quite a long time ago. It's just people haven't necessarily, may not necessarily have kept up with that change.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, in the 1990s, IIP was, there was a huge push from it from government in the 1990s. And that was probably when, you know, it was most well known. And you know, what we do now is very different from that.
Okay. So obviously, as you described this process, it began back in January with a lot of research, both of your own customer base and also the sort of the broader body of academic research and current thinking of high performing organisations. And you've gone through this process of creating this new framework. Where are you at now in terms of beginning to roll this out then? What are the sort of timelines and where you are?
Yeah, so the full launch of this will be next summer, in summer mm-hmm. 2015. Mm-hmm. What we're doing at the moment is that effectively what we've got now is our beta product, and we are going out and testing that with a wide range of organisations. So we've held roadshows across the country. We've been talking to stakeholders like CBI, the TUC, you know, Chartered Management Institute, mm-hmm. whole range of different stakeholders. We had a conference mm-hmm. for 400 IIP organisations just a couple of weeks ago, and we've been socialising uh-huh. the new framework with them so that they get an opportunity to help us co-create it over the coming months, so that by the point that we get to the launch next year, we've developed what the kind of the structure that we've got at the moment, and really refined it and polished it so that when we launch it next year, we've got a real world-class product that people will, across all sectors and sizes of the organisations, will want to engage with.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of feedback have you had so far?
It's been hugely, hugely positive. The maturity model is something that our existing customers really like, and they can see how they can use it to identify where they want to get to and then measure where they are now and develop action plans for the improvements that they need to make. Mm-hmm. People always like things being simplified. no one more so than me, so that's gone down really well. I think the areas that we particularly need to focus on going forward is around about language. I think you and I had a conversation, Joe, last week about how in our culture we can tend to get stuck on words, and we spend lots of time debating whether, what was it we talked about?
We talked about the employee engagement term, didn't we? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of our culture is rather than getting on and doing it, we tend to want to endlessly debate, you know, the meaning of different words. In our context, I think, you know, this is really important that we do that, but equally we want to inject pace into this process and really move on so that we get something that's robust and meaningful for a wide range of organisations, from small to the most complex large corporates. And yes, language is important, but we won't allow language to be something that will slow us down.
And then when you're so things like whether you call the maturity model or other terminology, the basic principles of what you're doing are set. It's just really the wording that perhaps goes around.
Yeah, it's refining
a little bit.
Yeah, it's refining the content. Yeah. Yeah, and make sure that we've got those descriptors absolutely right so that they're engaging and people can understand them. You know, I think in our world we do like lots of jargon and things like that. My mission is to make this really accessible, you know, for anyone coming to it, whether you be the chief executive of a large corporate or whether you be, and it's written in a way in a business-like language that's meaningful and pragmatic. And that's very much our focus, so that people can engage with it and really get what best practice looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you don't need an MBA to understand the framework of IIP then.
Yeah, exactly. And 99% of the entrepreneurs that I meet in this job don't have one of those. And they prefer...
Okay.
They prefer straight talking.
Straight talking. I think we all do. Good. I mean, we spend a lot of the time we spend at Woodread is actually trying to turn things that are unnecessarily complex, trying to turn them into something that's simple, trying to simplify them and make them easily understood. That's for sure. So what come next summer? How will you launch this to the world then, Paul?
Yeah. Well, we're just in the process of working that out at the moment, what our launch plans are going to be. But certainly we're going to invest in really getting that message out there. And so we'll be probably in the new year you'll start to hear lots more information coming out from us through various outlets about the new framework and when it will be ready and how you can engage with it. And if people want to engage with it now in terms of helping us shape it, then I'm sure you'll give my contact details somewhere or other through this podcast, this radio programme, and I'd be delighted to engage with anyone who wants to get involved.
Righto. So at this point, you're happy to... obviously, you're sharing it at this point with people through this media, so you're happy to... hear from people who perhaps would like to get involved, and certainly your profile, your LinkedIn profile, is connected with the show page actually, so people can find you through that, and I'm sure through the Engage with Investors in People website as well. So we're coming towards the end of the show now. So I suppose the other thing is this just going to be something that will happen in the UK, Paul, or is this going to, because you've touched on at the beginning that you've also got some global clients for IIP.
Yeah, we'll be rolling it out internationally. We'll roll it out in the UK first, and then towards the back end of 2015, early 2016, we'll be launching it internationally as well. So our international partners are heavily engaged in this process. So my colleague from the Philippines was at one of our briefings, and another colleague from Belgium was at our conference recently. So, yeah, we're absolutely focused on meeting the needs of our international clients as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's interesting actually, because Engage for Success and its four enablers is something that is actually expanding outside of the UK. I know quite a number of the listeners to these shows actually come from overseas, and I know that some of the members of the Engage for Success Task Force have been engaged with talking to people in other countries. So certainly the principles, of course, are globally applicable, aren't they?
Yeah, I must admit, I thought when I came into this job that one of the things internationally we need to really be careful about is the cultural differences. But I found that we have much more in common than we have different.
Than we have different.
So, yeah, the way that people want their workplace to be organised, the way they want to be engaged, isn't significantly that culturally different from my experience so far.
Well, on that positive note about what unites us as a world rather than divides us, I'm going to have to say thank you very much, Paul. We've come to the end of the show. Much appreciate you joining us. Thanks for sharing that insight with us, and thank you everybody for listening. Thank you very much, and goodbye. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.